This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. We record in the offices of Raider Solutions, a technology company that offers a complete fleet of IT solutions for businesses of all sizes. Raider's motto is, "You just want it to work, we understand." If you're wondering if Raider can help your business, please visit RaiderSolutions.com. I'd like to thank Iberia Bank for its support. Founded in 1887, Iberia Bank is the largest bank based in Louisiana, headquartered in Lafayette, with 329 combined locations throughout the South. They offer the resources of a national bank with the personal touch of a community bank. Visit IberiaBank.com for more information. And lastly, I want to express my gratitude for Lafayette General Health. As Acadiana's largest nonprofit, community-owned regional health system, Lafayette General Health is committed to restoring, maintaining, and improving health in the communities it serves. For more information, visit LafayetteGeneral.com. Our guest today is Dr. Holly Howitt, Executive Director of Beacon Community Connections, whose mission is to improve community health and well-being by reducing unnecessary hospitalizations and incarcerations for people in crisis. Holly also served as the executive director of the Lafayette Parish Criminal Justice Coordinating Committee under the purview of the Lafayette Parish Sheriff's Office. While there, she started the Justice and Health Collaborative, which increased community mental health support to reduce the number of people with mental illness that are in jail. Prior to that, Holly was a project director at the Picard Center for Child Development and Lifelong Learning, where she directed numerous research and evaluation projects, including juvenile justice research. And Holly, that's quite a mouthful of what you've done, but basically you're here because you're helping people that need help. So welcome to Discover Lafayette.
Thanks, Jan. I'm so glad to be here.
Oh, yeah. We talked before the podcast began. Your name has come up several times, and the Beacon Project, which is now Beacon Community Connections. It's come up in the business community, it's come up in the healthcare community, and it all goes back to some people need more social help to either stay out of jail, stay out of the hospitals, and get their life on track. And so I'm really honored to have you join us and talk about this.
All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah. So let's start with your background. Would you talk about your training? You didn't, I guess this wasn't your path you originally thought you'd be on.
So, yeah, my career path has been a long and winding and very exciting road. I am trained as a speech-language therapist, and I did that for many years before moving here to UL to pursue my PhD in applied language and speech science. And after graduating with my PhD and getting married in the same month, I was looking for a job, and the Picard Center was just moving into UL, and I applied and got the job, which I was thrilled to. I was one of the first employees there. I was hired actually to evaluate the state's after school programs and positive behavior interventions and supports, or PBIS program, which is a positive discipline program in the school system. So, working on that led me to work on things like coordinated school health, which was basically looking at all the needs that a child has in school to make sure that they're in the optimal position to learn. And then juvenile justice that you mentioned as well, looking at that. And then I was fortunate enough to work with Sheriff Newstrom and Rob Reardon and Judge DePlanche with opening up the Juvenile Assessment Center here in Lafayette, which is a diversion center. So kids that otherwise might go to a juvenile detention home for relatively minor crimes, shoplifting, maybe a simple possession of marijuana, where now can be diverted. Their needs are assessed, and then they might be put into treatment, or even the family might be offered counseling and services instead of winding up in the criminal justice system. And then Sheriff Newstrom asked me to head up the Criminal Justice Coordinating Committee that he was forming, and I served under him and under Sheriff Mark Garber until June of this year, when Beacon was just getting to be really more than a full-time job, so I had to let but had to let something go.
Right.
And just now here I am.
Right. Let's back up and focus first on Mike Newstrom. I know that Sheriff Newstrom had taught at UL, and when mm-hmm. he was elected, when he ran for sheriff mm-hmm. and was elected, he had the goal of taking what he had learned and implementing it in the criminal justice system. And so his heart was always in helping people. I mean, it's not about incarcerating, it's about rehabilitating and mm-hmm. I guess preventing crime to begin with. But if somebody does get off track, helping them get back on the right path. And so your work at the Picard Center must have played right into that, because you were studying different things that affect people, right, that affect a juvenile.
Yes, we're studying something. And one of the great things about UL is that, and the Picard Center, is that it's applied research. Mm-hmm. So there's pure research, which is research trying to just find out an answer to some unknown question. Applied research really looks at how can we use this information to make the world better? And so, you know, being able to do that, not just studying juvenile justice incarceration rates or what happens, you know, what are the, how many juveniles that are in the juvenile justice system, how many become adult offenders, but really trying to look at, well, we know this, what are the things that divert people from that path? How can we get mm-hmm. people back on the path to being an upright citizen and being a tax contributor rather than mm-hmm. A tax burden?
Can you talk about some of that? Are there some trends that you see that lead to less than optimal outcomes for someone? I mean, what are some things that, you know, like, I guess a stereotype, but what would it be that you see?
Well, some of the, you know, there's some certain things that really just we can't change, but then there are a lot of things that we can change. So education, mm-hmm. Helping ensure that kids get an education and have opportunities. So once they graduate, you know, let's say we can get them to graduate, which Louisiana is and Lafayette are improving their graduation mm-hmm. rates, but we need to have jobs that pay a living wage available for them afterwards. Mm-hmm. And, you know, once we do that, you know, teaching people how to manage their money, what to do when there's a crisis. And that's kind of where some of the work that we come in. A lot of people might be going along okay, but then there's a crisis and they have no supports. That's the United Way's Alice report, mm-hmm. You know, really highlights the plight of what used to be called the working poor.
Right. We had Natalie Harder on recently, the chancellor mm-hmm. at SLCC, and she gave a case that stood out in her mind. One of her students was a single mother that was homeless, and yes. she had car trouble and was living on somebody's porch. And, you know, Dr. Harder said, I can't even believe she was doing what she did, but at least she had some support. There mm-hmm. was no mental illness involved. There was nothing other than just she was cash poor.
Right.
And didn't have a lot of support.
Mm-hmm.
So, so you must see the whole spectrum.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean,
help.
there's just a wide mm-hmm. Variety of needs, mm-hmm. and I mean, I think basically it comes down to remembering that all these people are people. They have good in them. They have made maybe some bad choices. That, you know, that's the same with any of us. And so mm-hmm. That's one of the things that I think Sheriff Newstrom really instilled in me was, just to remember, even though someone is incarcerated or an offender or something, they're still a person.
Right.
And 95% of people that are in Louisiana's jail and prisons are coming back to our community. And so it's up to our community to decide how are we going to welcome these people back.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the Beacon Project, the genesis of your work that you're doing mm-hmm. today. Would you talk about Blue Cross, you know, presenting, I know you applied for a grant, 232 Help was a partner. Would you talk about what happened to bring about the Beacon Project to address social determinants of health and helping people?
Sure. So that really came about from the Justice and Health Collaborative, which was something that we formed while I was at the Criminal Justice Coordinating Committee in 2015, because what we saw was people with mental illness, they ended up becoming incarcerated because of their mental illness. And a lot of them didn't really need to be incarcerated, but there weren't a lot of other options for them. And so these same people would also cycle through the emergency departments at our local hospitals. And so one of the first things we did was get those people together, the people from the criminal justice system and health and mental health, and start talking about just talking about it because, and there was some language barriers at first. Some people would use a certain term and the other, another system may use that term differently. So once we were able to do that and really look into what are the what's the capacity in Lafayette and where are the gaps?
Who are the people at the table when you talk about health and mental health and criminal justice?
Sure. So Acadiana Area Human Services District, that's our local public mental health agency. Some people just know it as Tyler. That's actually the building they're located in. So they were at the table. The local hospitals, particularly UHC, the university, Picard Center, and College of Nursing. We had various mental health agencies. Compass has been a big partner for a long time. And then people in the criminal justice system. So the sheriff's office, also the police department, the DA, public defender's office, judges have come together. And, you know, we just sat down and had a lot of conversations about, you know, what the needs are and what the challenges were.
And they're probably seeing the same people over and over.
Yes.
Whether
yes.
it's the emergency room or the courtroom.
Yes. Yes. And so some people will call them frequent flyers or super users. We prefer the term familiar face. It's just someone that's a familiar face. That's Seattle, Washington. That is the term that they use for that population. And it, it just sounds a little bit nicer than, you know, a super user. You know, just trying to, again, put that humanity back. With this population.
Right. So Blue Cross, I guess, stepped up as the first major donor.
Yes. So we, after looking at different models around the country, and we settled on this model in San Diego, we talked to Michael Tipton at Blue Cross Blue Shield, and he encouraged us to submit under the special projects designation. And we did that, and we're successful with that. That was a partnership with 232 Help was the lead agency on that. But we also partnered with the Lafayette General Hospital. So Lafayette General Medical Center, University Hospitals and Clinics, and the Behavioral Health Unit. We ended up expanding during our pilot year to both St. Martin Hospital and Acadia General, which is almost all the Lafayette General-owned hospitals during that. And so the Criminal Justice Coordinating Committee was also part of that process, and it was great. We had two navigators that saw almost 600 clients in that first year, and with just some amazing results. They would we call it non-clinical case management. So what they're, what the navigators are doing, if you want me to
get into this now.
So what the navigators do is within one business day of someone being discharged from the hospital, they would give them a call.
Like they identified this person probably needs follow-up.
Yes. The hospital would make the referral, and then we would call them once they were discharged and just kind of talk to them about what their needs were.
What were some of the needs? Like, what would you say a lot
of people
need?
So our biggest need was things related to housing. So either they were homeless or almost homeless, or their house might not be habitable for the condition they were in. Like, let's say they were having a total hip or a total knee replacement. The bathroom might need rails, or, you know, they might now need a ramp to get in and out of their house. So
they don't fall and hurt themselves again. Yeah.
Things like that. Also, you know, if they've had significant medical bills, they might need some rental assistance for a short period of time just to kind of get, you know, just to get back on their feet. That was probably the number one thing. Our second largest is transportation. We cover a 10 parish radius, and so transportation is easier in Lafayette Parish, although it's not, you know, there's still significant gaps, but out in the rural parishes, very difficult to get someone, particularly if it was a non-medical need. So going to the grocery store.
To get healthy food.
To get food, yes. Yeah. Let's say you're let's say you're diabetic and, you know, you live out in the country. Being able to go to the grocery store you know, that's not something typically that your health insurance is going to pay for. Well, they would pay for a trip to the doctor.
Or the meds.
Yeah. Or the medications. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, just even social things like being able to go to church or get a haircut or, you know, just be a citizen in our community. That's one of the big unintended things that we found was the prevalence of social isolation and loneliness. Mm-hmm. A lot of these people were living alone, and you know, the family for whatever reason might not be contacting them on a significant basis. So sometimes that weekly phone call that we would provide was their connection to the world. Uh-huh. And just the number of people that just appreciated getting a phone call, whether we were able to help them or not, which in most cases we were, almost 90% of the time we're able to connect them with at least one resource.
Right.
But just that phone call.
If I'm not being redundant, so let's go back. So all these people spoke, we have a need in our community. And then you got a major grant from mm-hmm. Blue Cross. So you started the project, and the hospitals would refer mm-hmm. your clients, familiar faces.
Yes.
And then you'd have people call them. Did the things that came out as the program began, were they what you anticipated? I mean, you're talking about the social isolation. Were you looking more at the beginning at they need transportation mm-hmm. to the doctor, and then it evolved into they need a ride to church or they need help?
Yes.
With something, personal hygiene or something?
Yeah, so when we started out, you know, basically because we'd done needs and gap analysis previously, we knew transportation was an issue.
Right.
We knew there are food deserts in mm-hmm. our community. I mean, we knew some of those things, and so we were kind of ready to mm-hmm. to address those. And if there were still gaps, to continue to document those gaps. Mm-hmm. But the social isolation was very surprising. And then also another thing that was kind of surprising was what we called, we just put it in a category called medical assistance. And so the number of people that maybe needed help finding a primary care physician, that was really surprising to us. You know, the number of people that are using maybe the emergency room as
right.
their doctor. Mm-hmm. And part of the problem is Medicaid. When Medicaid expansion happened, it was great, and I'm a huge proponent of Medicaid expansion. It gave everybody insurance. It gave everybody access to some care. Not enough primary care physicians accept mm-hmm. Medicaid clients, mm-hmm. and so while Medicaid, the way the Medicaid system works, you're automatically assigned to a primary care physician. That primary care physician may not know that they've been assigned to you. And when you call to make an appointment, they may not accept you. And so, you know, so then they have Medicaid, but they're back kind of to square one mm-hmm. in that they're not able to visit a doctor. And, you know, when they're earlier when they, you know, and so sometimes they wait until,
right.
you know.
So locally at UHC, they accept mm-hmm. Medicaid. So those clinics can take some of your patients?
Yes.
Is that how it works? I know that
yes.
you're a
mm-hmm.
10 parish area or whatever, mm-hmm. but people end up maybe having to come back to Lafayette.
Yes, they do. I mean, UHC, you know, is still kind of the regional mm-hmm. charity hospital, even though, you know, there's
right.
not called that anymore. Yes, but most of the hospitals around here, you know, if you show up, they will take Medicaid. Now,
but that's a hospital situation. You
yes.
want people going to see, get my diabetes
yes.
checked, to get
yes.
my blood pressure. How
mm-hmm.
is it? You want
yeah.
you want preventative health care.
Yes. And so, you know, there are a couple of resources. There is UHC. Mm-hmm. There's also St. Bernadette's Clinic mm-hmm. that is on the Catholic Charities of Acadiana
right.
campus. But I mean, those are just two. There's some federally qualified health clinics mm-hmm. And, you know, getting right. into them. But it's just kind of knowing the resources and helping get connected mm-hmm. to that, which sometimes people, they don't know the resources and, you know, they try
it.
A couple times
it.
And they give up. I mean, they get, you know, like we all do, we get frustrated with something
yeah.
and we
I'm
just don't
okay
want to deal with it.
Yeah, I'm not
exactly.
going to deal with it. Well, when I had David Callicott on, that was really, I've heard him speak in public, but when he was on this podcast, Holly, he talked at length about social determinants of health. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I've heard about it from the educational people and the business community. With this Beacon Project, what have you seen in just this short time? This started just like a year plus, right? You haven't been doing this.
Right.
How long have you been doing this?
So we started our first clients in January of 2018. Okay. So, yes.
David said, I mean, with the grant that Blue Cross gave, the hospital, Lafayette General, has seen dramatic savings, like dollar.
Yes.
Like over a million. I don't know if it was close to $2 million in savings.
When we did the cost analysis, first of all, we did some analysis just of the data. The hospitals were very interested in readmission rates. And mm-hmm.
Because they're not going to get reimbursed if people just keep on through the revolving door. I mean,
right.
At some point.
And yes. And yeah. Medicare actually has six conditions that if you show back up within 30 days, they
right.
don't pay anything.
Right.
So, hospitals were very interested in readmission rates. And so Lafayette General and UHC's readmission rate, 30-day readmission rate, is about 15.5%. So about 15.5% people wind up back in the hospital and either through the emergency room or just being readmitted. Our patients, the 569 patients that we saw, we had a 30-day readmission rate of 4.4%.
Wow.
Which is a significant mm-hmm. We knew we were going to reduce. We didn't know it was going to be that much. And even our 90-day readmission rates were only 7.7%. So definitely, you know, we did what we were supposed to in that we mm-hmm. were keeping people in the community stable and healthy. Then they asked us to do some cost analysis of this. So we looked, and the first time I ran the numbers, I was like, this is not... Right, this is way too much money. I did something wrong. So I redid it and then showed it to Cian Robinson, who mm-hmm. was our point of contact at Lafayette General. He's like, this looks bad. This looks too high. And so we had the Picard Center mm-hmm. Run the data. So we had three different people running the data, and we all came back with the same. And so it was on their master charge list, it was about a $12 million savings.
What? In 1 year?
Yes. Now, then they went back.
All the hospitals. All the,
all the hospitals. Uh-huh. Yeah. And so then we went back and looked at actual insurance reimbursements. So for those, I had to learn this. Master charge, that's kind of like the list price. That's what the hospital says, mm-hmm. something calls. But of course, if you have insurance, like a Blue Cross or United or whatever,
yeah.
they're going to negotiate.
Mm-hmm. Set price.
A set price.
Yeah.
And so the insurance reimbursement, it was about $2 million in savings, but both of them it reduced the cost by about 63% in both cases. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's a significant amount of money for a community or nonprofit. I mean, some people don't realize that the Lafayette General Health System is a community-owned nonprofit.
Right.
They're not out to make money. They're out to any money that's left over, they are reinvesting into mm-hmm. our community.
And, you know, we're talking about the financial end, but the real win is for people's quality of life. I mean,
exactly.
At the beginning, you said we're
yes.
talking about people. It could be you or me
mm-hmm.
that just needed a helping hand.
Right.
And to keep us out of the hospital. What are some of the things, like, are they typically diabetic heart issues, or what type of people are you seeing in the study?
It really runs the gamut. I'll tell you two of our, these are our case stories that we tell quite frequently, and it just kind of shows the range. So the first one was a man, we'll call Mr. Danny, and he was in the behavioral health unit, so mm-hmm. he was in there for a mental illness, and when he came out, he had been living in a swamp, in a tent in the swamp, because he didn't like staying in the shelters. He felt like there was too many people. He just wanted to be by himself. But the behavioral health unit had gotten him stable. He was ready to. He wanted a job. He wanted a place to live. He reconnected. Stayed with his. We got him mm-hmm. situated with his sister. And then, like I said, then he wanted a job. My navigator just said, "Well, I'm just gonna help you. I'm gonna do a job search like I would do." So she. got on Google and Indeed and got him a bunch of jobs.
Lead his website. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Got him. He wanted to do something handyman. He wanted to. He was very good.
Skills.
Yes, he had skills, and he wanted to. He knew how to fix things, and so he ended up getting a job at a hotel in town. So he did that. Saved up money. Got himself a truck. So then he wasn't relying on public transportation. And then when we closed his case, he had just gotten into his own apartment. So I mean, that just really shows a guy from living in the swamp in a tent with a mental illness to, he still has a mental illness. I mean, some of these mental illness, they're chronic, but they're manageable.
Yeah.
And, you know, and now he's, you know, you know, on his way being a, you know, a citizen with a job, with a house, with things like that. So
you can't put a dollar on that.
No,
you can't.
And so, you know, just helping that person. So that's kind of a person that we had to help with a lot of different things. So then we had another lady, Miss Glenda, that we saw. She was in for a total knee replacement. And she was living alone and just needed transportation was all that she said that she needed. So we did that, but we still did the weekly phone calls, and our navigator noticed that she was getting more and more sad when she would talk to her. And then on one case, one call, she just said she had, I guess she finally built up the trust and was like, you know, I was divorced within the past year. I'm living alone for the first time in my life. I don't want to go on like this, and kind of started vocalizing some suicidal ideation. And so our navigators are trained in suicide prevention and, you know, lay person intervention. So she used her skills to talk to the person and was able to connect them to her to a counselor to, you know, kind of get her what she needed. So that's just kind of, it goes to show you, I mean, this is not just for, you know, the homeless guy. This is for this lady. You know, she had insurance. She had a stable house, things like that. She just needed some transportation at first, but really she ended up needing some mental health. So
that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was the Beacon Project. And I know now you've made this, the Beacon Community Connections is a 501c3. And so can you talk about how you fund this? Because this isn't like some government agency. You're a nonprofit,
right?
That's dependent on others.
Yes,
so
and so we really have three sources of income, and so our first source is with contracts. So because we proved the concept with Lafayette General, they entered into a contract with us to continue doing the services, and so we are continuing there. We've also working with Lourdes. Lourdes worked to get a Franciscan Missionary Fund grant to then contract with us to provide the services out at Lourdes for 3 years.
So we have
that. So contracts with hospitals and other healthcare providers, we are pursuing those. We also have some contracts. We worked with the Sheriff's Office on what's called a Justice and Mental Health Collaboration Grant. The Sheriff's Office is the lead on that, but we, Beacon Community Connections is contracted with them to not only we're not only going to be providing community care and navigation to people that law enforcement identifies as having a mental illness to divert them away from jail, but we're also kind of overseeing the aspects of the program, and the data integration is a key piece of that. And then so that's a grant, so we do get some grants, and then also just fundraising. We do need the community support to continue to build and expand that.
Right. Well, it helps all of us, because if we can have a healthier community and give people that need help a hand up, we all benefit.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I get it. And I know that you have a big event coming up in September. Would you talk about that?
Sure, yes. So one of the ways that we are fundraising is we are doing educational events. And so our biggest event is the South Louisiana Community Health Summit, which will be September 25th here in Lafayette. And what we're doing, this is the second year that we're doing this, and what we're doing is bringing together healthcare providers of all sorts, bringing together policymakers at the local, state, and federal level and just community stakeholders that are interested in health and well-being. And we're going to be talking about how access drives outcomes. And access to care is one thing, but also having access to good data, having access to good policies, having access to cutting edge delivery mechanisms and technologies, and then all the access to that will drive access to positive outcomes in the community.
What type of speakers? I know you said there's statewide speakers.
Sure.
What type of people will be talking?
So we're going to have Ms. Kathleen Noonan. She's from the Camden Coalition, which they have been doing the work of breaking down silos between different systems. So like the criminal justice system, the healthcare system. They have something that they call a health ecology. So she's going to be talking about how different people can come together to partner to improve mm-hmm. social determinants of health is a huge key with that. We're also going to have Dr. Vindell Washington, who is the chief medical officer for Blue Cross Blue Shield of Acadiana. He's going to be talking about social determinants of health. We're going to have some healthcare disruption talks. What's the upcoming policies mm-hmm. and procedures? It's going to be an exciting jam-packed day for people that are interested in this topic.
It's very ambitious, but it goes with what you're talking about, because we can all benefit from this information.
Exactly,
right,
yes.
Right. Well, have I covered what you wanted to get in? I mean, did I ask you the right questions? There's so much in what you're doing.
Yeah, I think so. I would, I guess just for, you know, an additional, we are Beacon Community Connections. We chose the word mm-hmm. connections very deliberately because we feel like we are a way for not only individuals to connect to the community, but for organizations to connect with other organizations within the community. And we feel like there is so much good work being done in Lafayette and really in Acadiana, but oftentimes it's siloed, or we're doing this stuff and we're not sharing mm-hmm. information, and we're not sharing resources. And that's really something that Beacon yeah. wants to do, is be somebody that connects mm-hmm. for good.
You're connecting the dots for all of us.
Exactly.
Because, you know, we might think we know a lot, and then something so basic is just not, you know, it's not under our nose, so we don't know, oh, we could have called that doctor, or this, I could have done this.
Yes.
And made a big difference.
So exactly, yes.
I think it's wonderful.
Yes.
And what is your website, please?
Our website is beaconconnections.org.
Good. Okay. And Holly, as you know, we're here with Jason Sikora with Raider Solutions, and Jason will listen to our conversations and then always miss the big picture things. He'll show up and have some good questions.
Well, I had to cross off the website one because you just asked it. Holly, thank you for being here, by the way.
Oh, you're welcome.
The summit on September 25th, where does that take place?
That is going to be at the Hyman Convention Center.
Okay. And there's more information on the website about it.
There's more information on the website and on our Facebook mm-hmm. pages. If you're interested, tickets are available through Ticketmaster. So you have to go through Ticketmaster to purchase the tickets.
Okay, good to know. So you talk about navigators. So those are those employees or those volunteers?
Those are employees. They are bachelor's level trained employees that most of them have a degree in the social sciences, and then we train them in things like motivational interviewing, mental health first aid, ASSIST, which is a suicide prevention program, and other tools, just to give them the tools that they need to successfully help people in the community.
Excellent. And do you take volunteers for certain events?
We do take volunteers with the certain events. Since we're so new, we're still trying to figure out how to slot volunteers in. But we're definitely open. If anyone wants to help out, I can find something for you to do.
Excellent. Do you take donations? And if so, how does somebody donate?
Yes, we do take donations. They would have to, there's a contact form on our website, and they could fill that out, and then we can let you know. Up until recently, we did have a fund with the Community Foundation of Acadiana, but we're transitioning away from that now, so we're figuring out something new.
To donate that. Directly.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, and big shout out to the Community Foundation.
Yes.
We love them.
Yes. The Community Foundation of Acadiana, they served as our fiscal sponsor until we got our 501c3, which we now have. And yeah, we're very much indebted to to Raymond Hebert and Tom McCormick and everybody great. Over there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go all the way back to the beginning of the podcast. Speech therapy. What kind of stuff do you work on in speech therapy?
So a speech language therapist really just does anything that has to do with speaking and language. So you think about reading and writing would fall under a speech therapist purview, and also speaking and listening. So we work with people that stutter, people that have had a stroke and have something called aphasia, children with just a speech impediment that maybe they are not saying their R, so, you know, the wed wabbit, and people with language disorders. Sometimes people have trouble processing things the way a neurotypical person would process them.
Excellent. I bring that up because that hits personal to me. I had to see a speech therapist growing up because I have many speech impediments that I've worked through most of them, I think. Probably still need a little bit more work. Can you talk just very briefly about, this is coming up a lot now, and I think people are starting to get the picture, the importance of mental health care.
Yes. So that just cannot be stated over enough. One of my big passions is breaking down the stigma of mental illness. It should not be shameful to have a mental illness. And a lot of times, because there is such shame attached to it, people delay getting help or treatment until it's really impacted their life and they've become unstable, meaning that they can't function in their daily life anymore. And so, you know, the more that we can talk about mental illness and say, you know, words and understand what they mean, words like, you know, schizophrenia, clinical depression, anxiety disorders, the more that we can talk about those and make them more normal as part of something that people experience, the better. In Lafayette Parish, there's about 10,000 people right now with a serious mental illness. About 4% of our population has a serious mental illness in Lafayette Parish. And the sad thing is 67% of those did not seek treatment within the past year. So,
wow.
You know, and like I said, a lot of it, some of it is access, but I think a lot of it is shame.
That makes a lot of sense. And you might not even know that you're having an issue until you go start talking to somebody. So I encourage everybody I talk to, just go talk to somebody once a week for a couple months and just see what bubbles up. And maybe nothing, maybe something. You never know. Well, awesome, Holly. Thank you for being here. And Jen, obviously, you know, as always, thank you for letting me ask questions.
This has been a great
thanks to both of you. This has just been great. So thank you thanks for letting us get the word out about Beacon and the work that we're doing here.
Our guest today has been Dr. Holly Howitt, Executive Director of Beacon Community Connections. And I'm going to change your mission. You're connecting the dots in our community to help people that not only need help, but some of us just finding out what we can do to make a difference in our community. And I want to thank our listeners for being so loyal and supporting our podcast. Your support makes the show possible, and we can have people like Holly on that can share the good work in our community. And Jason, thank you, and Raider Solutions. For this interview and all of our interviews, you can go to the website, discoverlafayette.net, or you can subscribe on iTunes or anywhere you get your podcast. And we deliver a new podcast every Friday morning, so you can just have it sent right to your phone. Please share this with your friends. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, I'm Jan Swift.